Continuing with service to the Holy Dham, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu writes, especially the temple bhajari should be interested in visiting various temples in the Holy Dhams and having darshan of their presiding deities. Whenever visiting a temple or a saintly person, you should bring something to offer. Flowers, money, incense, scents, ghee wicks, fruit, uncooked grains, vegetables, ghee, new cloth, so on. It is common for temples to have a tray or basket for receiving such offerings, as Srila Prabhupada describes. Quote, the system is that anyone who comes to the temple, he brings something to offer to the deity. That is the beginning of love, to give something. If I love you, I must give you something, and whatever you'll give me, I shall accept it. So give something to Krishna and take his instructions. If people take advantage, automatically he becomes devotee, lover of Krishna. That is the success of life. Letter from Srila Prabhupada, 18th March, 1976. Srila Prabhupada particularly recommended visiting the seven principal temples in Vrindavan, which were established by the six Goswamis, the direct associates of Lord Chaitanya. Bengal also has many temples and deities established by Lord Chaitanya's associates. You should visit these temples in the association of advanced Vaishnavas, whose association and instruction will help you get the full benefit of the visit. The Srimad Bhagavatam comments on the danger of superficial pilgrimage. Quote, a human being who identifies the body made of three elements as the self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to bathe rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like a cow or an ass. Bhagavatam 10.84.13. As Srila Prabhupada writes in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.22 purport, one should not visit all these sanctified pilgrimage places and temples with sightseeing in mind. One must go to such temples and sanctified places, immortalized by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, and be guided by proper men who know the science. This is called Anuvraja. Anu means to follow. It is therefore best to follow the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master, even in visiting temples and the holy places of pilgrimage. As pilgrims, we must understand that a visit to the Holy Dham is not a vacation from devotional service. Rather, devotional service rendered in the Holy Dham earns one 100 or 1,000 times more benefit than the same service rendered outside the Dham. This is important, very important point, is that when one comes to Mayapur Vrindavan, one should come with the idea of rendering service. By increasing hearing, chanting, association with devotees, try to do some service to the Dham. One simply comes, well, you know, I work so hard, I've just come for a break. So why come for a break in that place? Go to someplace else. Go to the Riviera, go to the Caribbean, or, you know, whatever it is. What's that? Bikini Atoll or something, or, you know. Huh? The Bahamas, yeah. Like that. Or what's that one where the French always do the nuclear testing? Canary Islands? I can't remember. Whatever. Like that. So many places there are to go. You know? Go to Athens. But the point is we come to the Dham to render service. If we come to the Dham simply to sit back, enjoy ourselves, this, that, that's not such a good mentality. We should always come with the idea of rendering service. And there in the Dham, then we'll always find this Krishna and his temples. So then we want to visit those temples and then render some service to Krishna. Now is your problem. Oh, now he's got him. Okay. It's called a tiger beetle. the tiger beetle. They're the kind sometimes you find it on your skin, it just looks like a little burn. That's those. If you somehow never squash them or lean on them, it means they won't bother you. They won't do that. If you lean on them or push on them, then they have some secretion or something from the body, and that makes that burn mark. Like that. They're called tiger beetles because they go around eating other... Gandhi poka. Gandhi, like Mahatma. Same Gandhi. Yes? See, such a great person, he even has a bug named after him. Okay. So like that, one should go with the idea of visiting the Lord's places, visiting the Lord's temple, rendering some service to the deities there by offerings. In this way, and one should do this in the association of advanced devotees, so one can hear about these places, hear about the places, hear about the pastimes, hear about the devotional process. Then there's some benefit. If one goes to the holy place but does not associate with men to meet, like it says Bhagavatam, simply to bathe rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge, that person is to be considered like a cow or an ass, right? Cow is very, you know, what do you call it? Very gentle, situated in the mode of goodness, means the body is. The body and mind is. The consciousness is in the mode of ignorance. But the body and the mind is controlled by the mode of goodness. You see, cows, they sleep very little. They eat, you know, very sattvic things. They like sweets, you know. They're, you know, very gentle, like that. So the body and mind is controlled by, and the senses are controlled by the mode of goodness. But the consciousness of the individual soul residing in that body is in the mode of ignorance. Because the cow thinks they are the body. Right? The cow is very attached to, you know, all these things. It says a human being who identifies the body made of three elements is the self. So the cow definitely thinks the body is the self. Three elements means mucus, bile, and air. Right? That's the three elements. Who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen. So cows are very attached to their calves. You know, when we think of good mothers, then we think of cows. You know, they're very good mothers. Like you see, dogs are not very good mothers, but cows are quite good. Like that. So then, and who considers the land of his birth as worshipable, cows will get very attached. It means all the animals get very attached to the place where they're from. Right? And goes to a place of pilgrimage simply to bathe rather than to meet men of transcendental knowledge there. It means if a cow, cows like to take bath. If they see some water, they'll take bath there. To them, it doesn't matter what it is that's set. So they're not going to be interested in men of knowledge. So they're very in the mode of goodness, pious, right? Like that. So one may be pious by going and bathing. Or like an ass, one has to go carry so much stuff. The people, you know, the family has to go. They take so much luggage. You drag this around, drag that around, get on this train, on that bus. So much difficulty. So it's just like an ass, right? Also, asses aren't very, you know, overly intelligent. Like that. So, like that, if one is not doing these activities of going to a holy place and associating with advanced devotees, then one is considered like a cow or an ass. Like that. That is the point. So one should take advantage to hear. Says Prabhupada says, guided by proper men who know the science. It means someone who knows the science of the devotional process, the pastimes that are going on in the dham, the personalities who are performing these pastimes, and they can speak on these things and enlighten you. That is who we should associate with. Okay, is there any... Yes?
Maharaj, when you said when we go to the dham, we can enjoy ourselves. But then when we go on parikram and then we're in the association of great devotees, we're still enjoying ourselves, but we're doing service to the dham. Yeah, yeah. So is that wrong?
No. I mean, the question is that when I'm saying that one shouldn't go to enjoy oneself. So then when we go on parikram, we associate with devotees, so that is service, but we enjoy that that situation, that association. So is that wrong, that mood? What we're meaning is going with the mood of material enjoyment. We don't want to get involved in too many things. We're on a vacation, we're on a break, we don't want to be bothered like that. That's another thing. That's material attachment, material enjoyment. But spiritual attachment, spiritual enjoyment, that is what spiritual life's all about, is that learning how to change one's attachments to the material nature to the spiritual nature. Right? To change one's attraction to Krishna, his service, his devotees, his pastimes, away from the material world. You know? Like here. We identify the body. We don't identify with the body. We identify as Krishna's servant. Considers the byproducts of the body to be kinsmen, but they're not actual kinsmen. They come and go. The real kinsmen are the devotees of the Lord. The Lord's, you know, those who we do service with, the eternal servants of the Lord, they're our kinsmen. Then where we are born is worshipable. Where we're born is not worshipable. Where Krishna and his associates are born and perform pastimes, that's worshipable. Right? And one goes to a place of pilgrimage to meet the transcendental devotees who are there. That attachment is the proper attachment. Right? You understand? We have to be very, very careful. Whole thing is attachment is the whole question. Right? The whole essence of spiritual life is based around attachment. But it's just what you're attached to, who you're attached to, where you're attached to. So we have to become attached to Krishna, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's pastimes, his name, form, qualities, his dham. That is the perfection. The living entity will be attached. That's all. That is the nature of the living entity. You doubt that. But it's whether we are attached to Krishna or we're attached to Maya. Right? This is the whole thing. So the whole process of sadhana bhakti is to change our attachment to the material senses and material relationships to spiritual relationships and spiritual service and spiritual happiness. That's what sadhana is to regulate and restrict your engagement with the material nature and engage you in spiritual activities. Understand? So you restrict this and start to engage that. And as one becomes more and more attached here, then the restriction here becomes more and more automatically. That's why someone who's on the topmost platform, there's no restrictions. There's no need to follow the rules. Because they're already attached to Krishna. They're not interested in anything that would break rules. Right? It means any of the rules. The rules restrict one from doing things you shouldn't do because it's not Krishna conscious. Someone's Krishna conscious, he's not going to do those anyway. He doesn't care. It has no attraction for him. Right. Does that make some sense? Yes? Huh. Yes. Everybody asks this question when I make this point. It's a very common question. Okay. If the consciousness is pious, right, then one goes to the heavenly planets, right? If it's impious, then one... Or it's in the mode of goodness, you go up, right? It's the mode of passion, you stay here in the earthly planets. Mode of ignorance, one goes down. So down includes hell, animal life, all these kind of things. So one has to be in the mode of ignorance. But there's some piety there. You understand? Means... the person who ends up in a cow's body would have had to have done some improper activity to end up as a cow, isn't it? Right? Is it better to be a human or a cow? So which can you practice spiritual life more seriously? Right? You want to sit down and discuss Vedanta Sutra. Can you do that as a cow or as a human? Okay. So that means the cow's birth is a lower birth. But it's not necessarily that everybody who ends up as an animal doesn't have one bit of pious credit to their existence, right? So if they have enough pious credit, you know, some pious credit is there, then one of the births may be that of a cow, right? It's still animal life, but it's in the mode of goodness. So the animals also, even though they're in ignorance, within ignorance, then they have bodies and natures that are controlled by goodness, by passion, by ignorance. You know, like you take, let's say, a sloth. That would be heavily controlled by ignorance. You know, they move very, very slow. Everything's slow. Or you have in, what is it? You have down in Australia this thing called a wombat. Like that. They're kind of like a little small bear, you know, and some other thing. And they move so slow, you know, like that. They're just so, or like koala bears, you know, very ignorant. They just sit in eucalyptus trees and eat eucalyptus leaves, and they get intoxicated off the eucalyptus oil, and now and again they just fall right out of the tree, you know, like that. So they're, you know, they're kind of ignorant, you know. So it's like this. Different animals have different natures. That's why you see the human beings, they generally associate in dealing with animals, then you generally see they're always dealing with those animals that are more in goodness, passion, like this, you know? Like generally humans will be around, you know, what do you say? Parrots. You know, all the birds of the parrot family, elephants, they'll deal with horses, you know, like this. It'll be animals that are more, a little bit more sattvic. You understand? But the consciousness is totally, they think they're the body, and they're simply an anamoy, they just are thinking about eating, you know. They're attached to others because they're, you know, somehow or another related in some way or another. Yes, the consciousness is then the next thing down is the false ego. It means depending upon your ego, then you'll have your consciousness. Right? So they think they're the body, so and they're only interested in the senses. Right? Right?
The mind is peaceful. And you said the mind is peaceful.
The mind is more peaceful. It means their nature is peaceful. They're quiet, peaceful. You know. Does that make some sense? See, this is the important thing, is one may be doing certain activities, but consciousness can be something else. Just like Prabhupada mentions, you have the jnanis. They're absorbed in Mayavad philosophy, this and that. But their conscious, in one sense, their consciousness is then in the level of pranamoy, because they think of philanthropic work and this and that, or some of them, they talk so much about duty. They're on the platform of manamoy, you know? Because unless they're Brahmavadis, they actually cannot be situated in vijnanamoy, in understanding fully they're not the body. Because Mayavadis, it's a bogus philosophy. So the position of being that your philosophy is manamoy. Right? But your consciousness may be in manamoy or pranamoy. Pranamoy is, you have five levels of consciousness. First level is anamoy, which means that one simply thinks about the senses, especially eating, like little babies. You see, they're just into anamoy. Then pranamoy means you extended sense gratification. It means you see other senses. And you appreciate the other person's senses. Meaning that you will not bother their senses for your senses. And we make agreement. Okay, I want so much land, you also want land. So there'll be no argument, and then we put a fence here. On that side is yours, on this side is mine. Or we work together, we pay some taxes, we build a road. Now we can both use the road for our whatever we like, Your just systems of justice, Economics. These are all pranamoy. Yeah, philanthropic works, save the killer whales or like that kind of stuff. Greenies, environmentalists. Where you care for someone else's life, or want to work cooperatively with someone else's as one life form to another. Yes. Like that, You understand? Then manamoy means the platform of philosophy. Means mental speculation and religious principles. In other words, you have a philosophy, and that controls your life. The regulation is there, but this philosophy means you can have your speculative philosophies, but that's the lower end of it, because generally you see they're all connected to sense gratification there. Then you get into religious principles that have been given by God, right? So you have all your different world religions and that, who have been given by bona fide persons. But the top of that, of all the religious principles, is the Varnashram Dharma. That's the top platform of Manamoy, right? The perfection of the principles of Dharma or religious activity. Those things that restrict the life. Based on duty for a higher purpose. A principle is given by the Lord, right? Means you may restrict your life for someone else, like some other philanthropic thing. But it's still based just on some other buddy's body, and that's your sentiment. So you're doing it because of your attachment. You understand? While duty means you're doing it because you're supposed to do it. Of course, you may be attached to duty, to being dutiful, to being pious. But one must... So it's, you understand, it's just, you see the difference? One is because I'm attached, I care. If I'm not attached, I couldn't care less. Like, I worry about the killer whales. So therefore, I endeavor for that. I don't care about them. I don't care. Like that. But duty means whether I care or don't care, I'm supposed to do this. Right? So that's where you see all the rules and regulations concerning social life. Individual duties, social duties, like husband and wife, they have duties. Parents and children, they have duties. There's dealings that have to be, culture that has to be there. In other words, the culture comes in there. You establish your culture there. So you can have these philanthropic things. You can have your isms. Like that. But the problem is isms don't establish culture. Because isms are on the platform of the senses. They don't regulate the senses. Because I want to save the killer whales, it doesn't restrict me from, eating cows. Or it doesn't restrict you know, my, you know, eating and sleeping or drinking or, you know, drugs or, it doesn't, it, all it is I have attachment that I, these whales are not being, they're getting the raw end of the deal. And I want to be in some way helpful to see that their rights are maintained. You understand? It's very sentimental because it is some activity, but there's no philosophy, really. Philosophy is okay, yes, we should save everybody has a right to live. You know, at least the ones that I like, the killer whales at least. You know, if they, you know, if I eat while I'm out on the beach trying to save the killer whale that's been beached, I may sit down to my tuna sandwich. That's another thing, you know. But it's like that. Yeah, everyone here would understand. None of the kids, the little ones there. Okay. So it's a very subtle difference, but the one is duty. You're supposed to do this. You like it, you don't like it, you're supposed to respect your parents. You know? You like it or don't like it, you know, the husband and wife have their duties towards each other. They have their duties towards the children. They have their duties towards the community. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And ultimately, the purpose of all this, at least in Daiva Varnashram, is all these duties are for God. God's pleasure. The speculative side is they have their philosophy, so they'll try to regulate something to some way. But it means it's all on the platform of the mind. You know? But it's not necessarily connected so much to the senses. It's a philosophy. But it's not coming from God. So it's the lowest level is speculative philosophies. And then the middle level is like world religions. But they're not giving, that their knowledge is limited. And then the top of the Manamoy is the Varnashram Dharma. Because that's fully connected with the scriptures, with the whole idea of getting one out of the material world. Right? Every activity has some connection to getting us out. Though some are more direct and some are more indirect. So therefore the acharyas have gone through all the dharma shastras and all the scriptures and picked out for us which things actually either are helpful or neutral towards the devotional activities. And then we perform those activities. And those that may take us away from spiritual life, because the activities of dharma can also be applied for karma, to get good karma, to go to the heavenly planets, right? Or for moksha, right? Or for yoga. So those aspects are removed. And those that either directly or indirectly or neutral help devotional activities, those remain. You understand? So like that, then, so you may have a speculative philosophy that is simply about the senses, like Charvak. What is it? Beg, borrow, or steal, but eat ghee. His idea is, you know, life is for enjoyment. When this life is over, it's finished. So while you can, enjoy, and enjoyment means ghee. So beg, borrow, or steal, get ghee, you know, cook something nice, eat. Right? You understand? So that's his philosophy. So the philosophy itself is coming from the platform of Manamoy. But the activity or the consciousness of one who follows this philosophy will be Anamoy. You understand? So there's all these mixes. If everything was just so cut and dry, we would have been bored of the material world, you know, after, you know, probably one lifetime, you know, you would have figured it all out. You understand? And then we would have been frustrated. Because we don't want to be in the spiritual world because there God's the center and we want to be the center. And we don't want to be in the material world because it's just too simple and too boring. Right? Therefore, the material world is made so complex. You have 8,400,000 options on what to do. I mean, it's a lot of options, right? I mean, you think about it. You know, if you did 8,400,000. I mean, if you followed each option for 1 minute, you know, it would probably take a few lifetimes to get through all the various options, you know? You understand? So therefore, things are very, very complex in this way. You know? It looks like one thing, but it's another. You know? Like what's called crocodile tears. It looks like someone's really lamenting from the outside, but inside they're not. Right? You know, these kind of things. These kind of things are there. One has to be very... So the whole material world is looks one way, it's something else. Manamoy. I mean, it's just that everyone's trying to control, yeah, like that, but they have their philosophy. They make a whole philosophy about life. You know, the control is your life, what you would do. You know, it all your values come out of it. You know, it connects with everything. Yeah, yeah, it's all Manamoy. The philosophy department is always Manamoy. You know, where you read all these strange intellectuals, you know, like that. It's all like that. Prashad? Huh? For all the boys?
Small boys,
all of us. Oh, that's it. All right. Yes? Okay. Circumambulation of the Holy Dham. Rules governing circumambulation of the Holy Dham prescribe when to begin the circumambulation, in what sequence to visit various holy sites, how to gain the mercy of the Lord's associates at particular sites in the Dham, and so on. Such rules vary from holy place to holy place. One should consult authorized books for specifics. So he doesn't get into anything more here. In other words, all these things are to be taken into consideration. Is that there's proper places to start, proper mentalities that should be there, you know, proper association, you know, who are the personalities involved at the particular holy place, how to get, you know, and then how to pray, getting their blessings, like that. Offering obeisances to the Holy Dham. One should offer obeisances upon entering the Holy Dham. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, out of extreme jubilation upon seeing the dust touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, Akrura fell flat on his face and began to roll on the ground. Akrura's journey to Vrindavan is exemplary. One who intends to visit Vrindavan should follow the ideal footsteps of Akrura and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. As soon as one reaches the boundary of Vrindavan, he should immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan over his body without thinking of his material position and prestige. Krishna book, Akrura's arrival in Vrindavan. So like this, one should be... That should be part. We're living in the... I mean, if one comes to the Holy Dham, when one comes, then one should offer obeisances to the Dham. And that the dust from the Dham, then we should place on the body. And if we are living in the Holy Dham, then we should take advantage. That every day, we should offer our obeisances to the Dham. You know, for giving us shelter, for giving us... taking care of us so nicely. You know, that she has given us so much facility, so we should take advantage, we should reciprocate that. Any questions on that? Yes.
I heard once that getting in contact with the divine stuff produces your life. So let's say it produces service like
Oh, I see. By serving the Dham, it decreases. Means that when one comes in contact with the earth, with the dirt, then that takes out the, how you say, it balances the, how you say, the enjoying, the masculine principle of the living entity's conditioning. Like that. Because the living entity wants to be the enjoyer. So then the Dham, the earth, is feminine. So that balances that. It takes out those bad influences. That's why menial service is recommended. One always sweeps the dust, one always deals. So one has that direct contact. That's one aspect, especially for the brahmacharis. That's why they would always be doing menial service like in this way. Sweeping, gardening, all these kind of activities. Because then that dealing is very good for them. But otherwise, you know, any kind of service, you know, offering obeisances or doing parikram or, you know, whatever is there. Cleaning, these things. But specifically, it's good for brahmacharis to be in contact with the earth. Okay, offenses to avoid in the Holy Dham. This guy's back, huh? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur lists ten offenses against the Holy Dham that we must carefully avoid to gain the full benefit of pilgrimage to or residence in the Dham. 1. To disrespect one's spiritual master who reveals the Dham to his disciple. That if one disrespects the spiritual master, then how is one going to get the blessings of the Dham? The Dham is being revealed through the spiritual master. So if one disrespects the spiritual master, that means one's chances of having anything revealed then is lost. So one has to be very, very careful about this. To not disrespect the spiritual master. In other words, our relationship with the spiritual realm and the residence of the spiritual realm and the Supreme Lord is through the spiritual master. We are connected to the spiritual master, and then in this way we are connected to the Lord's associates, and in this way we are connected to the Lord Himself. Like that. So, and the Lord includes his place of pastimes, which is the Dham. So if we want to get the mercy and benefit of the Dham, then we must not offend the spiritual master or disrespect one's spiritual master. One should always remember that one's connection to the spirit, the Dham, is to the spiritual master. What's happening there? Okay. 2. To think that the Holy Dham is temporary. That one may think it's here for some time, and then after it may go, it's not eternal. Like that. That it will also be destroyed with the disillusion. So that is also an offense. You know, many times devotees will feel more comfortable with the West then with the Dham. They feel this, that, so many disturbances. You know, it's more secure. Because secure means something that lasts, right? You think of something secure. It's something that will last. Like if you get into a house, you know, and it's made out of, you know, tea biscuits or something, then you won't be overly confident that this house is going to last. You know? Especially if you see, you know, around the outside of the house, all kinds of, you know, old ladies with teacups, you know, seated at tables, and every now and again they reach over and take out one of the biscuits from your house and eat them while drinking their tea. You know, you will not feel confident that this house can give you shelter, right? Because it's temporary, you know? But if it's very thick and solid walls, you know, then you're going to think this place can give some good protection. So the same way as if... I'm impressed. This guy's back for the third time. Yes, so then we are thinking that the Holy Dham won't give us shelter. There'll be this problem, that problem, so many problems. So we think that it'll be more secure somewhere else. So this is a practical aspect that comes to us because we don't think that Holy Dham is eternal. And we do not see the Holy Dham as a person. So there's no relationship. So then it's temporary, right? Temporary means it has to be just like everywhere else. We see everywhere else things come up, go down, something's built, things change. So then we think the place is temporary, you know, from some angle or another. Its protection will be temporary. The management changes, buildings change, scene changes, something changes. But there's the Dham is under the Lord's direction. So things will manifest and develop according to the Lord's desire. And three, to commit violence towards any of the residents of the Holy Dham, or to any of the pilgrims who come there, or to think that they are ordinary people. Then in a note here, footnote, Srila Prabhupada writes, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan are Vaishnavas. They are all auspicious because somehow or another they always chant the holy name of Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 5.232 purport. So one should be very careful not to commit residence towards any of the violence of the Dham. Yes. Commit violence towards any of the residents of the Dham. So that means that includes anything, the humans, the non-humans, all this. One should be very, very careful. You know, like you may have a dog and it's in the house and this and that, one may have to deal with it. So a dog does not, if you go up to the dog and say, my dear dog, you know, you are sleeping in the Lord's sacred Yajna Kunda, and we know it is very nice and warm, and that and outside it is cold and wet, but you didn't take your bath before climbing into this kunda, and you didn't brush your teeth, and you didn't, you know, clean your backside with water, and, you know, all these different things. So it's better for you and for us if you get out of this kunda and go find another place somewhere outside and take your fleas with you, right? But you can explain all this to the dog, and the dog will just kind of look at you, and then it'll just put its head down again, and kind of hope that you, my God, and just hope that you go away. I get so bent out of shape, doesn't he? Like that. So now they don't understand this nice talk. So they understand when you pick up a stick and you wave it very menacingly at them. And then this kind of language, you're speaking their language, right? Just like if one dog wants to let another know that they are displeased, you know, they'll show their teeth, they'll growl, they'll bite, they'll chase them. You know, it's kind of like, so therefore you have to speak a language that they understand, right? So they understand sticks and those kind of things. Let me get back so quick. This is a different one. Oh, he's over there now.
He's on the bridge.
We watch him come back. Oh yeah, they. Hey, that was great. Oh, now I, okay, that explains why ants always come back. Where you flick them from or throw them from, they always come back. Yeah, they think, hey, that was great. Go back for again. Okay. Never thought of it from that angle. I always just thought they were stupid, but they're just great fun lovers, right? Okay. So then one has to be careful. In other words, one is doing it because that's the only way that you can deal with them, that they understand what you are trying to communicate to them. Right? That's the point. But one is not doing it out of a malicious, you know, feelings. You want to hurt them. You want them to suffer. That is then committing violence. And that will not be tolerated, because anyone who's born in the Dham, they're special. They're not ordinary. They couldn't be born in the Dham unless they have done some devotional service. Maybe they didn't perfect it, which, you know, it's very obvious that they didn't. But they have done service, so they're devotees. And any pilgrims who come, they're devotees. They've come to the place. They may be rough devotees, but they're devotees. You know? They may be gentle, they may be... whatever it is. Some are very nice, very sincere. Some are not. But still, they're devotees. Right? Like that. So we have to be very, very careful. And we should not think that they're ordinary people. Like that. You know, we have to be very, very careful. We always have to remember they're devotees. But we must deal with them according to their... nature, their manifest nature, that has to be dealt with. So if they're properly behaved, this and that, then we deal with them in one way. If they're not properly behaved, we may have to deal in another way. But we always do with just the minimum amount of exertion, I mean, what do you call it? You know, one has to deal in a strong way, only how much strong it takes to get the work done, never beyond that. Right? So this way we avoid violence. Right? Four, to perform mundane activities while living in the Holy Dham. One should avoid anything that's just basically mundane. There's no connection to Krishna. That's why if you follow any other system basically than Varnashram Dharma, you cannot engage all your activities from morning to night, whatever you do in the Lord's service. Right? There is no system in the Western culture for engaging, you know, brushing your teeth or passing stool or, you know, in the Lord's service. Right? You ever heard of? Right? The Bible, the Quran, any of that deal with brushing your teeth, going to the toilet? No, they deal a little bit with things like marriage, you know, relationships with parents, you know, and other aspects of pranamoy, right? The sub-religious principles. But they don't regulate everything. So the whole thing is Varnashram system means that all activities have some regulation on it. And then, based on those regulations, you perform the activity, then out of duty. Otherwise, Western, it's just considered clean and nice and good and socially acceptable if you brush your teeth every day. Right? Isn't it? But if you don't brush your teeth, who's going to say anything? Maybe you'll have a few less friends, but, you know, like that. But, what do you call it? But in any case, or maybe it's just like skydiving or something. Right? You take the ant and throw him and it's like skydiving. So then, but in the scriptures, then it mentions you must brush the teeth, because otherwise you can't go before the deity. You cannot perform any spiritual activity. You know, of course, you can chant your japa, but, you know, technically one should be... It's very rare you'll find a conditioned soul that can be living a lifestyle of the mode of ignorance and be able to chant Hare Krishna purely. You'll want to bring your lifestyle as close as possible to goodness to affect good chanting. Right? Does this make sense? So therefore, those aspects are there. So to avoid performing any mundane activity, one must perform all one's activities in connection with the Lord. And one can do that then through the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti and the different aspects of the Vedic culture that are given to us by the acharyas. Right? Does that make some sense? Five, to earn money by commercializing deity worship and Sankirtan in the Holy Dham. So if you have deity worship and Sankirtan, but the whole purpose is just to make money for yourself, that's how you maintain your family, or just how you maintain things, and that's it, and that's your purpose behind it, then that's considered an offense to the Dham. You perform service for that, and if you get some, and then from that, if we're also are maintained, that's secondary. That's up to the Lord. But if there, our only motivation for doing these things is to maintain ourselves, and these things are not being used. Like some people maintain temples, and people come and take darshan on the deity, they'll give money to the deity. The pujaris will take that money, spend very little on the deity, just enough to keep it, you know, to whatever standard they're at, so people will come and give money, and then the rest of the money they use for themselves. You know, they sell the deity's land, they sell, people give gifts to the deities, they sell it, like that. So that is commercializing the deity worship. In other words, you make big arrangements so that people will come and see the deities with the idea to get money from the pilgrims and then live off that money. So that's the only reason that you're doing all the deity worship. So that's not very good. Are there any questions on any of these? Yes.
You're selling the clovers in front of the temple.
Say again?
Selling clovers in front of the temple. Huh. They get pig in the clovers and they print the deities. But they want so much money from it, that's why you're selling and selling for so much money. You just ask for it.
Not so much here. Means is that people want flowers and you sell them, you know.
But if I stay for so much money, you're gonna have so much.
Oh, if you try to take advantage of the people, because that, of course, then something is there. Then it becomes so mundane. Perform mundane activities while living in the Holy Dham. You know? Like that, it just gets too mundane. Means the businessman, anyway, according to the principles, should sell something of good, you know, good quality, of usefulness, at a reasonable price. That's your standard business rule, you know? But now if you do for more than that, you take advantage of the people. They can't go someplace else because there's no other places. So they have to buy from you, and then you cheat them like this. That's not very good. Yes.
Orange is okay, because I remember one festival in Vrindavan where the temple had bought, you know, the bridge lassi sweets. Yeah, they bought boxes. It was for the boat festival to offer to the deity. So they bought boxes, and then they sold them for like a few times more. Is that... I mean, it's going to the deity.
Means if one is organizing things to generate funds for the deity, the money's being used for the deity, then that's not so much a problem. No, one has to adjust it according to those who are going to be there. It should be, you know, prices and done in such a way that they don't feel uncomfortable. you know, one should not harass people and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. But if it's being done for the deities, then that's okay. Yes.
Sometimes you see devotees with a nice voice to make many songs and hits, like a very popular Nishtha. And even within the family, this is offensive, so we use Vaishnava in the other language.
Not so much, but they, if means the idea is if someone has a good voice, they sing, they can make tapes, sell those. These devotees like to hear some nice bhajans about Krishna and that, and they feel that, you know, it also adds to the atmosphere of their own house, reminds them of this and that. That's not so bad. But one should always remember that ability to sing, that just that others are accepting and appreciating, right? And that we're able to, you know, maintain ourselves in this way. That is all coming by Krishna's grace. One remembers that, then, okay. But if one doesn't, and one thinks it's myself, my voice is so wonderful, I'm so great, I'm so special, then with time, one will lose one's position in Krishna consciousness. In the past, that's happened to many, you know, good singers. But they thought they themselves were something special. And then with time, then they were nothing special, just another face in the crowd.
About the songs, sometimes you see, they make songs, they make completely Western music, almost digital, like music from Incan. And then sometimes Hare Krishna is there.
Music from Tin Can? That's a particular group or something? Is a group called Tin Can? Or? Huh? I've never heard. It's a good name, right? Oh, electronic. You mean like techno?
So then, if you go to Vrindavan, then you see the Vrindavan's also making songs.
Yes. Oh, I see. So you want to know, on since devotees are making techno music, and so then could we listen to Braj Basis? I see. Yes. Okay. So, I mean, at least those who I know who make, you know, techno music and stuff like that. The purpose behind it is those who are outside are going to listen to techno music. And so therefore you make some techno music that has Hare Krishna in it. And because it's good, then they listen to your music. And then they become tricked into hearing Hare Krishna. But it's not meant for devotees. I remember once Hare Keshav Maharaj, because a question came up, that devotees were listening to his music, because they have a studio there in Denmark. They make music for it, because they have a radio station there. And then they're always putting music on the air and that. So they keep so many musicians there, they're always making music. So then point was brought up that devotees are listening to this music. He says, I make this music for the karmis, it's not for the devotees to listen to. So his idea is devotees wouldn't want to listen to this because it's, you know, it's the medium through which it is not an attractive medium for devotees. You know, so then one would naturally rather listen to, you know, Srila Prabhupada or, you know, other devotees like that, rendering some. Doing some bhajans for the Lord's pleasure. Right? That's generally what one would do. Oh, you have one also. Oh, you have mosquitoes. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, next point six. To think that the holy Dham belongs to some mundane country or province, such as Bengal. To think that the Lord's Dham is equal to a holy place connected with some demigod. Or to attempt to measure the area of the holy Dham. So when one sees a holy Dham and thinks, oh, India, or Bengal, oh, I can't stand Bengalis, or I can't handle India, or, you know, all these kind of things, that is not very good. It means there's as we discussed before, there's a thin layer of Maya, called Prauda Maya, over the Dham. And so then one can see that. And then that one can think, this is Bengal, this is India, this is that. And think that it's also mundane like everything else. So that is considered an offense. And then, or to think that it is equal to some other holy place. You know, you're living in the Dham, but, you know, you want to go to Kedarnath to take darshan there. You know, all the holy places are already in the Dham. You know. And...
is there something wrong with going up there?
No, it's another thing, but that's just... you're going on pilgrimage, and it happens to be one of the places you're going, but it's not that we're here, but now we want to get some serious benefit, so we go to that place, because then we'll get some real benefit. You know? No, it is here. We happen to be on that area, and we go and visit and get the blessings of Lord Shiva. That's no problem.
So then, like, if you're going to Badrinath, and then is it offensive to go there because you want to see the deity or something like that?
There's no problem in going because one wants to see the Lord, like that. Lord, the Lord's devotees. But to think that the place has the same... but here, that's not a demigod, that's the Supreme Lord. We're talking about something connected to a demigod, a holy place connected to a demigod. Or to attempt to measure the area of the Dham. They say the Dham is just this big. You know? Like that. That one should... because the Dham is unlimited. It manifests within our vision in a particular area. But it's unlimited. It's not... it's different. It's done in such a way it's expertly managed. So it looks like... everywhere else, the sun is here. You know, inside here, it's a spiritual sun. It's a spiritual moon. When you look up in the stars, those are spiritual stars. When you leave the Dham, everything's in the same place. Means the material planets and the spiritual one, they're moving in the same place. So when you leave the Dham, then you'll see them in the same spot. But here, these are not material, these are spiritual. These are being controlled by Yogamaya for the Lord's pleasure. Well, outside, then that is happening by the external energy, right? Okay. Any questions? Okay, so we'll end here. We have... what's tomorrow? Tomorrow's Saturday. So tomorrow then we have the last few of the offenses to the holy Dham. And then we will go back and start with Upadana. Upadana? No, I think we'll go for... yeah. I think next we will go through the 64 items of worship. 64 upachars. Then we can get an idea of actually what's going on. And once we've done that, you know, that'll take us a while. It's quite a lot. Yeah. Once we've done that, then we'll go back through how you prepare for the worship, the technical preparing for the worship, the technical, paraphernalia, then the preparation, and the actual worship itself. Okay? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.